Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you can just give me write a letter to me or write a note at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So I'd like to welcome all of you to the show tonight, and before I introduce my very special co-hostess for the evening, Suzette Vernon, I do want to mention that we did have our healing weekend that I've been talking about for the last, 8 months, that it finally came to fruition this past weekend, and it really was an amazing experience. We met here in Philadelphia, and women from all over the country, including Canada and also from Scotland, came. And we shared, we learned, we cried, we laughed. We had wonderful workshops from professionals in the field. It was just an amazing day. And for those of you who made it, there's a sisterhood bond that's formed forever. And most importantly, that women who have the opportunity to meet other women who are going through their struggle. And we learned that no matter where you come from, no matter what part of the world you come from, no matter what your religion is, no matter what your color is or your culture is, the emotional impact for all of us is all the same. And what's most interesting that women find is that you don't even have to say anything, and everybody knows exactly how you feel. So that's why this kind of bonding is so important. When you have a healing workshop, you really come out feeling like you've gained more than you ever could imagine. And I'm planning for next year to hopefully be in Nashville. That's my goal. And to have a little mini get-together maybe this spring in Virginia. So that'll be exciting, especially if I can get my friend Suzette to come to Virginia. Right, Suzette?
Yes. If you have it in Virginia, I can come.
That's right. And you can bring Robert because Virginia is for lovers, right?
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what I heard. One of the things we were talking about, and I thought this is interesting, and this is something I want to work on this year. So if there are any listeners out there who want to volunteer and help me, because this is an effort that's really going to take a lot of help. And I've talked about it in the past, but I really feel now is a really appropriate time to do it. And maybe you're a little familiar with this too, Suzette, that, you know, gay marriage has become legal almost everywhere now, as far as I know. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that gay people should absolutely have that opportunity to get married to each other rather than us. I think that's like the best part of that. It's definitely a win-win as far as I'm concerned, and I encourage it all the time. But here's what's interesting. You know, divorce is state by state. And every state has different divorce laws. And the interesting thing is that, in, for instance, in Virginia, adultery is not considered adultery if it's with a man. In other words, a man and a woman could be considered adultery, but not a man and a man. And there are other states that have that same law. And I think that's a law we need to change. Because now that gay marriage is accepted and gays have equal rights, then they have equal responsibility when it comes to adultery. And it does make a difference because for some women, it's a difference in money. It's a difference in status as far as a divorce case. I mean, it's not a cause for divorce. I mean, when you have no-fault divorce and there's no other choices, it's one thing. But there still is fault divorce in a number of the states. So it's really important that we pick up the ball. And if gay people truly want to be equal, then they have to take equal responsibility on the adultery end. How would you feel about that?
You know, interestingly, I'm glad you brought it up because I would have assumed that with gay marriage being legalized, that it would have, you know, updated the legal system and the laws and so forth to make them equal to what traditional couples, you know, the same rules with the same consequences. So I'm learning something tonight, actually.
Right. I'm not sure how it is in your state. I know in Virginia, because I have several women there, you know, became the issue. And I know other states I've done research on, it was the same situation. I'm not sure which states now consider it adultery, but it's certainly not all of them by the long stretch. But I think it's something, if gay people are truly to be equal, then this would really help their status, I think, as far as being equal. Because by not acknowledging it, it's like not acknowledging that they're equal. So I think it's really important for women not to have to be at a no-fault divorce when, you know, no-fault still makes you feel like you're a victim. And in these marriages, I'm not saying there's ill intent at all on the part of the gay person. They made a mistake. But why should that be a no-fault? If the person wasn't gay, the woman would still be married. You know, she didn't feel there was necessarily a problem in the marriage. So she was planning her life forever to be with one person. So the fact that she's not, it's not because she didn't choose to be. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think if her husband or partner cheats on her, whether it's with a man or whatever, you know, that's still infidelity. That's still breaking the contract of marriage, because you promised your fidelity to that particular person that you're marrying. So if they, you know, do that, that's still a breach of the marital understanding and the agreement. So, I think, most definitely.
So that's one issue, is the divorce, you know, as far as, you know, making it gay and equal partner as far as infidelity. But the other issue is really, is this really a no-fault divorce when not both parties? It's not like two people just didn't get along and now the marriage is ending and you just want to make it no fault because both of them had issues. You know, a lot of people get married young. They don't realize what marriage is. We know that story. And
right.
Marriage, you know, could be the wrong marriage. You made your choices based on the wrong choices. I definitely do believe that not everybody's meant to be together forever. You know, you make mistakes and you can fix them. But in this particular case, it's not like both parties made a mistake. I mean, it's that the husband was gay and the wife didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I finally came to terms with this in the Christian way, even though, you know, I'm not Christian, but I have many Christian
friends. I know,
that's
what I'm saying. How'd you come to it in the Christian way? Go ahead, girl. Tell
because
me about
I have
it.
Really some wonderful Christian women in this network, and they've really helped me understand, and probably, you know, your help also, that when women come to me who are Christians and they say to me, I can't break my vows, that I've learned that these vows were made before God under fraudulent conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, since they were made under fraudulent conditions, the contract or the agreement is invalid.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I feel that very same way because my thing is, if it wasn't, what if it was, you found out that the person that you're married to was a child molester, God forbid. Or you found out the person you're married to was a bigamist. Or you found out the person you were married to. You see what I'm saying? Then you can't, I mean, it would be almost ridiculous to say, well, I made a vow. Well, yeah, but the person is a child molester. I made a vow. But now you found out this person has another wife somewhere else. So just taking that, just I made a vow, you've got to add some wisdom. I think sometimes we think that the Bible is so rigid that God only thinks with one side of his brain, that he does not have the ability to reason or to judge situations, the uniqueness of each situation, which is refuted even in the Old Testament with the story of Solomon and the two women that are arguing over this baby. And one says the baby is mine, and the other says the baby is mine. And Solomon says, well, let me just cut the baby in half. And you can have half the baby, and the other person can have half the baby. And the true mother screamed and said, no, that's okay. She can have the baby. Please don't hurt the baby. And he knew that had to be the baby's mom. And I think when you look at stories and you look at the Bible in a broader context, it's very clear and very obvious that God has the capacity to think and to reason and to judge and to perceive. So why would he make this a sentence? Well, I stood before God and I promised. How many people have promised and done different things and have found out that it wasn't what they thought it was? I mean, I just this thing of thinking that Christianity and God is rigidity, that it's a bunch of rules that we have to follow vehemently, as if there's
and
no
and that's a
greater.
Funny thing. I totally agree with you, and I have this conversation with my Christian friends because of the fact that everything that I've read in the New Testament, everything about Jesus, and, you know, I really do believe I have a really good handle on Jesus. You know, we came from the same tribe. I believe in many of the same things that he did. He was about love. He was about acceptance.
Yeah.
He was about helping people. He wasn't about, you know, sending people to hell. He wasn't about punishing. He was, I mean, if anything, he was very much similar, like, to the Pope that just came here. But I'm saying that he had the same spirited heart to be one of the people, to help the people, to feed the people, to heal the people. I mean, this is what I interpreted, you know, that Bible to mean. And yet it's gotten so twisted and so twisted out of shape by people's own misinterpretations of it. But if God loves people, why would God want anybody to suffer? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Right.
It makes absolute, especially when you know that humanity is flawed. It, to me, it's ridiculous to know that humanity is flawed, and those that subscribe to the biblical account of it, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, you know, and all the other scriptures that say, you know, Jesus knows that we are human and all these different things. It just seems like it would be even more, that Christians would even more embrace the love and compassion and grace than the set of stoic rules, as if we're still in the Old Testament. It's like, my God, we act like the rules, you know, that we are have to adhere to a set of rules, else we're just going to be doomed to hell. And that was the part for me growing up that made being a Christian so very hard. I would hear the older people talk about how being a Christian was the best life, that, oh, it was the best life. And I remember sitting in my chair, I was afraid to tell anybody for fear of going to hell. But what I was thinking in my mind was, well, I sure can't wait till I get to the best life part, so this is hard for me. You know, it was just so hard, because it's almost like everything was a sin. It's like, is it okay to breathe? Just tell me, is it okay to breathe? Because it was like you were walking around in a straitjacket, wait, trying to make sure, or you're walking around on a minefield, trying hard not to step on a mine lest you should blow up. It was so difficult to live by that structured, rule-driven life. It was so hard, and the greatest liberation for me was messing up. I just could not keep the rules. I couldn't keep them, and it was such a liberation for me to realize that God was just as close to me. I could feel his presence. I could feel his love even more so in my humanity.
You weren't so worried
than I did
about
when I was trying so hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's when I felt the genuine love. When I look at the way people feel, you know, fear so much that they're willing to just live their lives in misery because they feel they made a vow. But once again, that vow was made under fraudulent circumstances. And I'm not saying man intentionally went in to defraud you. I'm saying that it's fraudulent when you make vows with someone who's gay. And even if he doesn't know it at the time, that's the way it turned out. And therefore, that's not keeping a vow. Because I tell women, you can't say for richer or poorer and sickness and health. You don't say for straight or for gay. That's not part of the marriage vow. And then for Christians, like, here's another thing I thought of that I thought was really good that I thought of this. But you know how some Christians condemn Christianity? I mean, couldn't condemn homosexuality. So they say that it's in the Bible. So if it is, then why would you be able to stay married to a gay man? You need to leave.
Yeah, that makes sense, too.
Right, so no matter how you want to take it and look at it, I mean, I don't believe that, but I'm saying if they want to believe that, then they should accept the fact that this is not what God wanted for me.
I agree. It seems that would give even more legitimacy to leaving the marriage. And then I think, too, Bonnie, I think sometimes we forget, even us Christian women and Christian men, I think we forget that marriage takes two people. It is two people making an agreement. If you're upholding your part of the agreement and the person that you're married to is in breach of that agreement, then are you saying that you still got to stay true to the agreement even when the other person is not? Because it wasn't like you made an agreement with yourself. You made an agreement with somebody else. And if they breach their part of the agreement and are not able to in any way salvage or make amends or do something that would allow the marriage to continue, then you don't have a marriage. And I think that's the thing about it. It's like you don't have one. You might have a good platonic friend, or you might have somebody that you enter into an agreement with and you share property or whatever, but that's just like a business partnership.
Mm-hmm.
What makes
it's
marriage,
not what marriage is a, it's not what marriage is about. And
exactly.
Marriage
exactly.
is a partnership and not a business partnership. I mean, people think, oh, well, we were in the same business together. That's a partnership. No, that's not the kind of marriage partnership you need.
Mm-mm.
Am I right?
Oh, you're so right, because, I mean, I was in a business partnership with my ex. We were an indomitable force
mm-hmm.
when it came to business. But our marriage, oh, my God, was a sham.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sham.
Did people recognize that? I'm just curious, because a lot of times people say, well, they thought we were the perfect couple. Is that true with you and your ex?
Some people said that. Other people were like, well, yeah, I knew something was up with him, but I thought, you know, well, they seem happy, and maybe he got himself together. Maybe this is just, you know, whatever. But most of the time when I talk to men who would be very straight up with me, they would say, oh, yeah, I knew it. And I'm like, what? You didn't tell me. But, you know, I would think to myself, curse that bro code. That bro code that says, well, you know, hey, it's almost like that bro code makes you turn the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until it all goes downhill. Then they're like, oh, yeah, we knew it. I'm like, why didn't you tell me while I was in the middle of it?
Well, we thought you knew it. You know, this is one of the things that kept coming up this weekend with our women. And the tragedy is so many beautiful women internally, externally, women who are just full of, you know, heart and full of pain, because they've been living in painful situations for so long. And one of the things that women have such a hard time with is really seeing their inner self after they've been demoralized for so long, and to see mm-hmm. that they have value, because some of these men, and this cannot just happen with gay men, it happens with predators of all kinds. I mean, when I say predators, not equating gay with predator, but there are some predators who are gay. But a lot of straight people who are narcissists, who are sociopaths, borderline personalities, and they know how to find us. They know how to seek mm-hmm. us out. They're looking for kind and giving women. And if they know you're vulnerable, like I tell the women, how, you know, when they have bad relationships afterwards, did you tell them right away about your gay husband? Yeah, I did. Well, that was a mistake. You know, once they see you have weakness, coming out of a bad situation, then those mm-hmm. kind of men who are seeking that know that you're going to be prime bait for them, because they know that you've had a twisted life, that you were easy to manipulate, and if you jump into a relationship before you're ready, you're certainly going to get knocked down again. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I would say that's true, and I kind of want to straighten, kind of clarify something when I know when you were saying that they prey on kind and giving women. And I kind of want to work with that a little bit, because I don't want women to do like I did. Thought the problem was me. I thought the problem was because I was kind and giving and naive. You know, I thought that was the problem. And so when things, you know, went down, I developed this kind of callousness, because I thought the problem was I was kind, I was giving. But the real revelation hit me later, where it was like the problem was not that you were kind and giving. The problem was you did not understand gay men. That was the problem, because a lot of times we'll think, oh, yeah, if I hadn't been so sweet, if I hadn't been so nice. But no, you want to be sweet. You want to be nice. And it's not because of being sweet and nice. It's because of not understanding. The ignorant part was the part that was the problem. The denial part was the problem.
Well, I agree with you. That's the problem with gay men. But there are a lot of women who go after their gay man and find a straight man who is a predator. Because
True.
They don't, they and because they are too nice, but they confuse being nice with yourself and being nice to others. And I believe that self-love is the most important love, because you can't truly love somebody else unless you love yourself first. Because
Right.
then it's called needy love, and that you love someone. If you don't love yourself enough, you're going to latch onto these men who are going to use you and abuse you, and they don't have to be gay. They're just predators.
Mm-hmm.
And they look
yeah,
for
and
women.
I think I look at it as being vulnerable, because I think one of the things that tends to happen, and I see it happen a lot with the different people that I coach that deal with relationships, especially women, we
mm-hmm.
have a tendency, after we've been hurt a number of times, to
mm-hmm.
get more and more callous. And we blame our feminine form. We blame that, oh, I'm a woman, I'm too emotional. It's like we blame that and become
uh-huh.
try to get hardcore and get tough, where our femininity or our kindness is not the problem. The problem is us not knowing the difference. I'm taking our vulnerability and falling for the next guy that tells us that pays attention to us. Those
uh-huh.
are the issues we have to really deal with. But a lot of times when I deal with women, it's like the more they've gotten hurt, the more callous, the more disregarding of what truly makes them who they are and their true power suffers as a result of it. No.
And I do agree with you. However, I still believe that women have to build themselves up before they should go out again.
Oh, yeah, I'm not refuting that at all. I'm not refuting that at all. I'm just saying this thing of
you
I
have
was
to
too
build
nice.
Them,
I was
that
too kind.
Well, sometimes they
yeah,
are too
it's
nice.
Vulnerable.
And But sometimes they are too nice, and they leave themselves open, you know, open to letting people in, not just in relationships with men, but with relationships in general with people, you know, they become the caretakers and they take care of everybody except themselves.
But is that nice, though? I think that's my point. Is that being too nice? The definition of nice, I think, needs an overhaul. Because when you take care of everybody else at the expense of yourself, you're not being nice.
You're being needy.
Exactly, or you're being codependent.
Right.
But you're not being nice.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're being kind to everybody else at the expense of yourself, then you're not being kind. Or that kindness is not coming from a truly pure, loving place. Because when it's coming from a pure, loving place, you're kind to yourself, and out of that flows kindness to other people. That's why
that's
we kind of need to
talk
kinda
about that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's where love is really pure. When love is pure and unflawed, it's when it's applied to ourselves first. And we really, and it comes from, and so when we give it out to somebody else, it comes out of our wholeness, not out of our sense of pain, lack, or unworthiness.
And
does
I agree with
sense?
Everything you're saying, that women have to first learn to love themselves before they're capable of loving anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you love yourself, then you can have boundaries that when you don't love yourself, you really don't make any.
Exactly.
You know, when you make boundaries, you let people know how far they can go, and then they're going to be crossing over lines and expecting much too much that you shouldn't be willing to give. If it's not comfortable for you to give it, then you shouldn't be giving it. And you can't
yeah,
just do things because it's going to make people happy.
Exactly. It goes back to standards. One of the things that I've heard Steve Harvey say and I've heard other men say is men respect standards. But when you don't have self-love, when you don't know how to love yourself and to how to teach other people to love you. You always defer to them. And then there's no standard. There's no standard. It's like, okay, today I want to do this. And then he says, well, I don't want to do it. And you say, well, if you don't want to do it, then we don't have to do it. You know, that to me, that's not coming from a self-honoring place. Because when you come from a self-honoring place, it's not that you disregard or devalue somebody else. It's that you value them enough to be honest, not only in what you say, but in showing up in kind. It's the example I give sometimes with people that I say, you know, a lot of times I've heard people say, I told him I don't do casual sex. I told him I don't do casual sex.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, you might have told him you didn't do casual sex, but if you slept with him, your actions said that you do.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's that kind of thing that you have, I think, true kindness and true being nice and true being loving is when you apply it to yourself. And because you honor yourself and you know yourself, you bring your real self to the table. And you say, this is what I require. This is what I need. And if that person
uh-huh.
can't give it to you, then you do what's necessary because you regard what you need to
uh-huh.
the point that you're going to make sure that if this person cannot do it for you, that you're going to find a way to honor that part of yourself. I mean, I think that's what starts happening when you start really learning to love yourself. If you're not willing to put yourself at risk for somebody else, and you're not willing to let that person have your heart. If he walked away or you had to walk away from him, he doesn't deserve to have your heart. And he doesn't deserve
uh-huh.
to have that kind of illusion.
Suzette, we were talking about you at our conference, and I was explaining to people how lucky we are to have you because you're a wonderful coach. And I was trying to explain to them the difference between counseling and therapy and coaching, which have some
mm-hmm.
similar strands to them. But I told me that if I was explaining this right, that a coach works with you on where you are today and how to get to
mm-hmm.
your next point when you feel kind of
yeah.
stuck. Or if you're coming out of an emotional relationship where there was abuse involved and you have to put your life back together and you don't even know what foot to put in front of the other, the coach is there to cheer you on, to do a game plan with you, to see where you want to go and to develop a plan so that you can get there. Is that phrasing
yeah.
it right?
You are phrasing it wonderfully. I have to add something because I coached someone recently that taught me a very valuable lesson, is the person, if they come to you for coaching, they have to be ready to move forward. Because, like I told somebody, I said, I can't do stuck. If you have not healed to a point or processed to a point that you're ready to make a move forward, even if it's baby steps,
mm-hmm.
then you make it impossible for a person to coach you.
And I'm very much the same. That's why I decided not to be a therapist. You know, I was trained in counseling. But I
mm-hmm.
like to solve the problems in the here and now, and let's move on and get a game plan, which is more like coaching.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I don't
want
to have to spend 10 years with somebody going through their back. I'm not saying that that's not valuable. It's just not where I'm valuable. I'm valuable
exactly.
in the here and now and future. And I think that's a lot of what you do. And
mm-hmm.
you do it even better because you're really coaching them throughout the whole process. And a lot of times people go on a track thinking that this is where I need to be. And I think having a coach really keeps you on that track when you start moving off it or start rerouting it without really understanding what you're supposed to be doing or moving backwards instead of moving frontwards. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, a coach will do that. A coach will point it out. A coach will say to you, sweetie, now I let you talk about this the first session, and I let you talk about this the second session. But now we can't keep putting this car in reverse. We can't.
Exactly.
You know, are you ready to move forward? If so, we're going to put a kick stop right there. Trust me, I understand. I heard your heart. You know, I've been through similar things that you've been through. We have made that has already been legitimized. Now, what are we going to do to go forward? That's where we've got to go. And the thing about it is I give people maybe the first one or two sessions to really emote, to get it out, because a lot of them are bursting because it's like, oh, my God, somebody's been through it too, and I just, oh, this feels good to have somebody validating me. I'm not crazy. Somebody else went through it too. Their husband said the same thing to them. And I know that they need that. The first, maybe the first or one or two sessions. But by the third session, Bonnie, I'm like, okay, we're not going to get together every week and keep talking about, and guess what he did last week? Or guess what my ex, guess what? Well, honey, you won't believe what he's doing with the children. It's like, wait, this is not a social club. This is not two women, you know, having a great Haagen-Dazs moment, eating ice cream and talking about how terrible this man is. No, this is about developing strategies so you can take your life back and move forward with confidence and self-assuredness, knowing that the future is going to be so much brighter without him. If we can just get you to look forward.
Do you find that some women just get stuck in the moment and they can't get move forward?
That's the biggest issue. When I'm coaching women that are coming out of straight gay situations, the biggest thing is to get them to stop deferring to what their ex did or what their ex wanted, what their ex said, how their ex lived. But, you know, it's like everything seems to be always going back to him. And I'm like, well, no, I asked you about you. And for many of them, they're so used to talking about themselves in terms of him.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know what their own thought is about things apart from him. And that's one of the biggest hurdles. Once I get them over that hurdle where they're able to talk about themselves in the present moment, get in touch with who they are, how they feel, what they want in the present moment, then we can move forward. But it takes a whole lot of coaching in the beginning to get over that rut,
You think are some good ways that people can rebuild their self-esteem?
Well, I know one way is to definitely see a coach, definitely. That goes without saying in my book, to see a coach to help them. Or if they have some other issues that maybe the straight gay situation brought to the surface, you know, whether they might have some eating disorders or some issues, some depression or whatever, I would say go get professional help to help you to deal with your psychic and emotional pain first. Then when you have dealt with that and you're ready to move forward, see a coach. Those two things most definitely. And also for some people who were like me, they couldn't just leave because they had their economy tied into that person. I had to strategize my escape from my ex. I had to think about it. I had to figure out a game plan to leave because my whole economy was attached to him. And so what I had to do to keep myself from going bananas was, one, I sent emails to Bonnie K, sometimes 10, 11, 12 at night. Or I should say 12 in the morning. And the other thing is, reading materials that help put you back, connect you back in touch with who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you are in a straight-based situation, or even if you're heterosexual, getting ready to divorce or separate, so much of your sense of self is tied up in that other person. And
mm-hmm.
I think what helps build confidence and help build rebuild self-esteem is in getting in touch with you again. And sometimes reading great material, I was listening to Oprah last night, her Super Soul Sunday, where she had Brené Brown on her
uh-huh.
show, and Brené has written a new book called Rising Strong. And just listening to her talk about that book, it deals with those areas in our lives where we deal with discomfort
uh-huh.
and learning how to deal with it in a way that causes us to rise strong. And in rising strong, it's basically meaning you're rising as yourself. You're rising as your best self. And so books like that, I know for me, like I was telling you, the self-help in the library was my go-to. I was checking out as many books as I could that could help me get back in touch with me. And once you get back in touch with me.
Let's talk a little bit about your books, Suzette, because I think your books could really help people.
Thank you, Bonnie. Well, of course, Bonnie's favorite is Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's her favorite.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean it's the only good book. It's my personal favorite, but your other books are wonderful, too. Let's start with the first one, The Sound of My Life.
The Sound of My Life. Yeah, I think The Sound of My Life and The Sound of My Soul are
mm-hmm.
really good books for connecting back with the soul of who you are. Because
mm-hmm.
if you go through something traumatizing like that, then your soul is traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think reading, especially The Sound of My Soul, helps you to be able to connect the dots and really get in contact with your soul and really know how to respond to your soul from a standpoint of compassion and non-judgment and unconditional positive regard. If that can be a position that we take in being patient with ourselves when coming out of a trauma, being patient with ourselves when rebuilding our broken self-esteem, being patient with ourselves as we're trying to get our sense of confidence back, then that within itself builds confidence, because if you can't trust anybody else to have your back, you start realizing, I can trust myself. I can trust myself not to betray me. I can trust myself not to fall for the banana in the tailpipe. I can trust myself not to lay in this bed one more night crying secretly to myself because my husband doesn't want to touch me.
Mm-hmm.
I start requiring more out of him. I don't just sit back and let him treat me badly. You know, all these different things happen when you start getting in touch with who you truly are and start valuing that person, because when you're there for yourself, that automatically sends your self-value up to yourself.
Uh-huh.
When you don't betray yourself, when you make a commitment to be there and to honor yourself, that automatically causes your sense of self-value to go up, thereby building your sense of confidence.
Uh-huh.
Because the real eroder, of the real erosion of your confidence is in you're not having confidence in yourself. It's not so much not having confidence in your ex or in your ex-gay husband or whatever. It's that by living with that person, you've lost confidence in yourself, because in order to live with that person, you have compromised yourself.
Uh-huh.
But when you start reconnecting those dots and start making small, subtle changes, start asking for what you want. Start saying when something hurt you and not deferring to him. Oh, God, oh, he was so hurt. Well, baby, you were hurt. You know, when you start saying, yeah, but I was hurt. and you stick and you just plant your feet there without trying so hard to make things so easy for a person that's not treating you right, it automatically starts helping to rebuild that self-confidence. And the more you do it, the more confident you get, because you start knowing, hey, I'm there for me.
And I do want to say it is really difficult to do this sometimes when you're in a relationship, especially mm-hmm. with somebody who is abusive, emotionally abusive. As, you know, is saying at the conference, you know, we all have different kinds of husbands and there's all different kinds of abuse. I know with mine, you know, he was a yeller and a screamer. You know, if he didn't get his way, or he'd be very, you know, passive-aggressive, or he'd be very just aggressive. And it was almost as if he would shout me down to shut me up. And mm-hmm. he felt like if he could mm-hmm. scream loud enough, then I would stop, you know, fighting back. And I did, because I couldn't stand to have to be attacked. And I didn't like the constant badgering, you know, and screaming and humiliating me. So I just learned to mm-hmm. keep my mouth shut. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of women, they learn to shut down. In other words, whatever feelings they are having, they learn to turn them off. Mm-hmm. Almost like, you know, having a switch where I better not be able to feel anything, because if I do and I get upset or I get angry, I'm going to be punished for it. And these are women who really hurt me the most because, not hurt me, I mean, I hurt for the most, because I know that I was once one of those women. And I was just very fortunate that my marriage broke up at an early phase, as opposed to spending 20 years or 30 years with someone who has constant battering, constantly hurting you. But it's really hard, I think, while you're living in a situation to start to heal. I always say you have to leave it first, and then you can begin, you know, the healing process. But while you're living with the person...
I think in the situation that you just mentioned, if the person is going through that kind of attack
mm-hmm.
constantly, then yes, you got to go.
Exactly.
But at the same time, Bonnie, the thing about the indomitability of the human spirit is you do have some people that in the midst of difficulty, in the midst of that kind of situation, they find something that keeps them sane. And it's almost like, have you seen the movie Shawshank Redemption?
No, actually I haven't, but I've heard so much about it.
I'm going to give just the part that kind of proves what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
One of the actors, I forget what his name is, but he has been falsely accused for having killed his wife. He didn't do it, but he's falsely accused and he's thrown in prison. Well, while he's in prison, he goes through some heinous crimes against himself. There's a group of men that rape and sodomize him on the regular. There's the administration that uses his administrative, bookkeeping, accounting talent, promising him that they're going to help him, only for him to find out that they're not. So he goes through some
mm-hmm.
very, very difficult, extreme situations. Yet, while nobody is the wiser, he is slowly digging himself out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm saying that there might be somebody out there listening that is in a difficult situation. But when you're in a difficult situation, you have to plan your exit strategy. If you can get enough mental faculty, and sometimes reading these books and listening to shows like this, it sparks something in you that wants to survive,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have to wait until you're gone. But you start becoming active in planning your exit strategy. And your husband does not have to be any the wiser. But you know, in the secret place of your inside, you are thinking of ways that are going to help you to escape. And that's, and I offer that because some people, you know, it may be a while before they get out because their economy is tied to him or because of other you know, extraneous reasons. But they still can grab a hold of some powerfulness, even in situations that it seems like, it looks like on the outside there is no power. And that's the beauty of the human spirit and the beauty of the human, that built thing in us to survive. That there is a
In some cases, I definitely agree with you, but I also see women who have lost that spirit, you know, and who just can't regain it because it's a constant battering. And it's just every time you think you're getting up, you're knocked down, and they have so much to contend with. And I think as long as you stay in a situation that's so destructive, it's always going to be that way. You know, that you won't be able to move ahead because every time you try to take a step ahead, you're thrown back. And, you know, I just don't know how to really explain that better except that you need to go.
Exactly.
And
you do need to
make a game plan and then you have to go. I mean, you have to
really
find out what you can do, whether it's go to a family member, you know.
Yeah,
and then you have women who will tell you they're just... I know, and then some women just make excuses for these guys. You know, they just can't, they come up with, well, I really love him so much, and I know that he's just going through a bad time, and he wasn't like this when I met him. Well, he's like that now.
That's not the battered wife syndrome.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's a battle. It's a battle for women every day.
And the ladies that might be in that situation that are listening to this show, the more you hear truth, the more you hear truth, the more it starts slowly picking away at that battered wife syndrome, starts picking away at your powerlessness. Because it's like, they grab a pearl. It might not be enough to make them leave today, but the more they listen to truth, the more it challenges them to stay in a lie.
And it's true. That's why so many women who tell me how much this radio show is a link to their sanity.
Yeah.
You really get to understand how they need the support, how they have to hear what's the right thing to do.
Because that's the only way
they can. Sometimes they're so isolated and alone, and we are a link to them, and that's what I'm so proud that we can do. When you come here and you know, you speak your truth and you go through your experience, and I want to give Suzette's page so that if you would like to have coaching with Suzette or buy any of her books, they can buy them on your website, right?
Yes, they can. They can come to either www.suzettevernon, that's V as in victory, EARNON.com, or they can go to www.suzetterhinton.com. Either one of those will take them to my website.
Or they can just go on gayhusbands.com and look under my resource tab, and you'll see Suzette's information there. And if you don't feel like doing that, you can just go to Amazon and look up her books and buy one to start your journey of feeling better, because all of Suzette's books are so uplifting, and they do make you feel better, and they do validate the way you're feeling. You know, Suzette is very honest, and she puts in her own feelings, her own experiences. And I think we all learn so much from that. And I feel that sharing is the way that people learn from each other. I'm not ashamed to share anything. If it can help one person, and you're so giving of yourself, right?
Yes. That is what makes what we've been through not not for naught. Because you go through something like that and you say, what's the point? You know, you say, why? What did this mean? You know, you want to know, why did I have to go through this? But I look at it now, if what I went through can help anybody listening to be able to grab a hold of hope and be able to get themselves out of a situation, or they can hear your voice or my voice in their head and say, you can do it, girl. You can do it. We did it. You can do it. You can do it. And we share our stories of just how messed up in our thinking, how things happen in our lives, and how somehow or another we made it here. We made it here. And it's like, we made it here so we can come back and tell you, you can make it here too. And if you follow us, we know how to take you out, because we have had to, you know, go this path to get to freedom. And if, when you find the way to freedom, you can go back and grab somebody's hand and say, come on, I can take you if you listen to me.
We're on the freedom trail.
I know the way.
We're on the Straight Sisters Freedom Trail here.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, it's really the route to go. So, ladies,
yes.
I want to thank you for listening. Suzette, thank you so much for always encouraging our women. And, you know, your help is invaluable. To all the women out there who listen to this show, all I can tell you is that we're here for you. Hope is always there for you. And whatever we can do to get you through, well, you know, you get by with a little help from your friends, and we're your friends. So, Suzette, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week. Do you have anything special planned?
Actually, this October started my Enough Virtual Workshop.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It's a four-week workshop. It's every Saturday from 9 a.m. until 12 noon. And what it is, it takes women who have lost themselves in relationships or keep losing themselves for love or have decided to walk away from their hearts because they feel like their hearts betrayed them. It takes these women and helps them to become heart-connected relators, where they learn they can trust themselves again and build their confidence again. And so I make it a four-week workshop because it takes 21 days to break, you know, a habit. And a lot of these workshops, they end after a weekend or a week. But I'm like, you know what, if I can stay in your proximity for 4 weeks, then that improves your chances of being able to make a change and make a shift going forward. So that's what the Enough Virtual Workshop is. And even though we started, I still offer session by session. So if there's anybody out there who feels that you're in your journey and you're ready to move forward and would love to be in a group with some very full and wonderful women and get some group coaching with me, then all you have to do is go to my website and you can sign up and be a part of it session by session. So it's really been very, very good. It's been very good.
All right, ladies, you have a job to do. Go check out these workshops. Get by the book and call Suzette when you're ready to get coached in freedom. Suzette,
yes.
I love you.
I love you, Bonnie.
I will mention next week we have Ken Reinhardt from the Straight Spouse Network talking about men who go through this with lesbian wives, because I always like to give that perspective because sometimes men do listen in. And the following week I have a new author, Tara, who wrote a book, Looking for Mr. Straight. It's a really good book for younger people. And Tara gives some really good tips. So we have some good shows coming up before you come back. But definitely looking forward to hearing from you again in just a few weeks. So good night, everybody. And I love you, Suzette.
Good night, everybody. I love you, Bonnie.
I love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.